Welcome to Off the Court, presented by Point Guard U. Today we are joined by Coach Larry O'Connor. He is the boys' head varsity basketball coach at Canton Galva out in Kansas and longtime PGU partner. Coach, super pumped to have you on. Thanks for joining us.
You bet.
Yeah, so I'll give you a little rundown for those of you that don't know Coach O. Legend coach out in Kansas. He's got an overall career coaching record of 387 wins with only 170 losses. He's a four-time 1A state champ, two-time 1A state runner-up, two-time 1A state third-place finish, and two-time 1A fourth-place finish. And if I'm correct, you have, I think, like four other state appearances possibly, maybe a couple more?
Three more plus this one. We took our team to state this year.
That's awesome. While we're talking about going to state, what was it like for you to lead Brewster to back-to-back titles? What did that mean to the Western Kansas community, you know, especially with just having Josh Reed, leave?
Yeah, that's pretty special. It was some special times. It was some tense times. It was, after Josh Reed, they won the state championship his senior year. He went on to K-State and had a fantastic year and was a starting guard for them. But I came in the year after he left. And I had one of his brothers at the time, and then one of his stud brothers was an eighth grader at the time. And big expectations, but they lost, all five starters from that team. So the following year I came in, it was my first year actually coaching high school basketball as a head coach. And I think we only lost three games that year. We went into state. We did make it to the state tournament. And unfortunately, we got upset in the first round by Purdy Prairie. Kid named Luke Cook just lit us up. We weren't ready for him. And it was my first time ever experiencing a state tournament, as well as a lot of those kids as well. And then the next year, we put together another good season. And we got beat in the semis and ended up getting third that year. We beat Lebo for third place that year. And then the next two, their junior and senior year, we went back-to-back state champs. And it was special because it was a special group. It's probably still my most overall favorite group just because of the hard work that they put in. And we had some really outstanding players. And but it was also pretty tense. Their junior year, it was kind of an easy run because in a championship game, we won by about 30. Had a couple good seniors, lost them. But the following year, with the group that I had, it was really tense those couple years because we were also good in football and we were undefeated. And it was the same kids, obviously, at a 1A school, small school. And we were ranked number one in football, and we got upset in the semifinals both years of that year to Hanston. And then they went on the next week and won state 45 to team, and we lost 16 to 12, I think, and maybe 28, 26. So, I was the head football coach as well. So then we got into basketball, and the first year was good, exciting. That town was a basketball town with the Reeds and the Rushes and, the Jamesons. And it was fun, and getting your first win, getting your first state championship. A lot of coaches coach a lot of years and sometimes don't even make it to the state championship. So we were lucky. But the next year was pretty stressful. A lot of expectations, had a lot of good players coming back. The expectations got on it, it got to the point where if you didn't win every game by 20, 25, 30 points, people were asking questions, what's wrong with the team? So the pressure built, but the kids handled it well. And as a young coach, I got in right in with them, and we kind of made it a goal that, we weren't going to be denied. And it was a special year. Brewster was very, very lucky we went through a lot of kids in that class that I had with Jay Reed and Brett Armberger and Jamison and Clint Horanek. Those guys, over their 4-year career, we went 126-5, which is pretty impressive. Wow. The five losses were not two of them. Two of them were at state, and three of them were at Tournament of Champions in Dodge City. So we never lost anything in the league. We never lost a home game. They were undefeated at home all 4 years of their high school career. And it was a special, pretty special group. So, yeah, it meant a lot to Western Kansas, but it meant a lot to Brewster because they were such a basketball-dominated town.
Now, you mentioned the Tournament of Champions in Dodge City. What was it like taking a 1A school to the tournament?
Well, first of all, it was a privilege because they just had 5 and 6A schools there. And every year they took one of the best 1, 2, or 3A schools, only one. And for 2 years straight, they chose us, which was, pretty special. Now our league wasn't happy. We had to pay $500 to get out of our league tournament, but it gave Weskin, who had Todd Okeson and their good run, gave them a chance to, win a tournament because they weren't going to win it if we were there. So, but the Tournament of Champions was probably the reason that we won both back to back because we got away, we got out of town, we got to go to Dodge City, which is, 2-3 hours away. We spent 3 or 4 days together in hotels and going out and eating as a group and practicing, by ourselves there as a group and playing against some of the best competition. I mean, it's still today, the Tournament of Champions is top-notch competition. And we played some pretty good competition. The first year, we actually, their junior year, the one game we lost was there. I know the two games. We lost two games their junior year, and we played Wichita Heights opening round, and they were the number one team in 6A, and we only lost by 7 points. And then we beat Derby, who's the biggest school in Kansas. We beat them, and then we lost to I think it was Hutchinson that year. But the following year, their senior year, we took third. We upset Shawnee Mission South, who's one of the biggest schools in the whole state. We beat them first round, and then we played Wichita Heights again, the number one team in 6A at that point, and they were defending state champs, and they won state championship that year. We lost by 7 again, and then in the third place game, we played host Dodge City High School, who's always good, and we just. We were on fire. We beat them by 33 points on their home floor. So took third that year. But the Tournament of Champions is always special to get invited to. And we were very blessed. They treated us well. And we went out there and performed, showed the big schools that, little schools can play a little bit of basketball. So we had fun.
Ain't that the truth? That's awesome. Now you've had, you've coached for a long time. You've seen a lot of crazy shots, a lot of big game winning shots or game tying shots. Some pretty famous reactions of yours too on the sideline that I personally enjoy. There's one shot I got to ask you about. Can you kind of walk us through for those that don't know this as well as I do, but the legendary moment of Brett Arnberger's shot to beat Tribune in the semis for the second title and kind of what the significance was for the team.
Yeah, that's a shot that still lives to today. We were in tough situation there. It was late in the ball game. We'd got the ball. We were down 2. No, we were down 3, and happened to get the rebound. This was about a minute to go, and one of our guards. Our younger guards, because Jay Reed had fouled out, our best player. So Jacob Falcon got the ball. He was dribbling up floor, dribbled off his foot. So that left it with, just a few seconds, about 20 seconds or so. And they had the ball. Got it in. We fouled him. Heath Brown, who today is a very good friend from Tribune in that team. And he went to the free throw line, and if he would have hit one of those, we were done. We wouldn't have repeated. And Unfortunately, and I still, let him hear about it every time I see him, he missed both of them. And on the second one, we got the rebound, and Brett took it down, just dribbled it down the floor by himself, and got the three-point line, pulled up, dropped it, tied the ball game, went into overtime. And it was kind of special because we had had Jay Reed, who was that year player, 1A player of the year. He had fouled out late in that overtime or in a regulation. And Justin Jameson, who was, he averaged 7-8 points a game. He's just a workhorse. He knew his role. He took over. He took the game over. Hit some huge free throws. Clint Hrenek went to work, and he was a beast for us, and he got some offensive rebounds, putbacks, and ended up winning that game. And then we went on and played Argonia in the state championship and won by about 30. So that's still today, every year, the 1A, it's not at Hayes anymore, but when they were still playing that a couple years ago at Hayes, that was always brought up in newspapers as the best game ever played in 1A basketball. So yeah, it was pretty special. And it's funny because I get calls late at night, Brett Armberger and Justin and them, they're still great friends living Colby, and they'll go out drinking and they'll start arguing, and I'll get a call and we'll talk about that shot and where it was from and who was it. And, but leading to that, this year we had a shot just exactly similar. We set up kind of the same play because we had Brett coming off a couple screens going down. And this year in our sub-state, I had a junior, Jace Belts, and we ran a baseline double screen for him coming baseline, and our freshman point guard got it to him right in his pocket. He hit that thing from the corner as the buzzer went off to tie the game, send it in over.
The gym exploded. Gym exploded with it.
Exploded. And there's such – it's a, one of our students made a video of it. And if you haven't seen it, you need to look at watch it because it gives you chills. But we went on to win, in overtime there too, and take our team to the state championship this year.
That's awesome. Now, for those that are listening that don't know, I had the privilege of playing for Coach O for 1 year out in Sharon Springs. Coach, am I correct that your longest tenure as a coach was at Sharon Springs?
Yep, 20 years.
Okay, so now I'm curious, what challenges did you face in building a successful program at Sharon Springs, and how did you overcome them? And I ask this question with, a lot of coaches listening across the country that may be stepping into a new program and have hopes and aspirations of, state 14 state appearances, 4 state championships, and from the coach himself, how do you do it?
Well, I've done it the same way in all the schools I've ever been to. We're doing that right now. We're in the process of doing that right now here. But when I got to Sharon, they hadn't won, they hadn't had a winning season in 10 years, and they'd just come off 2 wins the year before. And I'm coming from a back-to-back state champions and winning program. So we walk into that, and, we had one really good player. Keith Ray was a senior that year. I think we won 6 or 7 games maybe that first year. But being the weights teacher and the elementary teacher, PE teacher, I saw the potential, potential for that. And it's the same thing at Brewster. It takes a lot of hard work, but it all starts with the youth programs. And I've ran since my first year at Sharon. We had our youth basketball programs on Saturday all year during basketball. So it ran from, October to March, once every Saturday. And we started the first year. I remember we had 13 kids. And my last year at Sharon there, and Sharon's a small school, and it was from grades, kindergarten to 6th. And we had 91 kids. My last year. And that's where it starts. You've got to get into your youth. You've got to know your youth. You've got to know their names. You got to know their parents. You've got to know, what makes them work hard for you. And if you show them that you're committed to what you're doing and keep giving them and reinforcing them the goals that we had. It comes around. So about the third year there, you know, we ended up, I think my son Kyle that works with you there with PGU, we took him to state in 3 years. That's where it all starts and that's where it finishes. You've got to get them in a feeder program, and then you've got to give kids that you're working with in the high school, you got to give them, you know, let them know that you're in it with them, and you got to work as hard. You got to go to clinics and you got to go to camps and you got to be there to open a gym, which, you know, when you were there, I was always at that gym. And that's what it takes. And here, you know, the opportunity came open at Canton Galva. I really didn't want to leave Sharon. I think you know that. I came with because of Tyler and the grandkids. But I didn't want to leave Sharon because we had a special group, you know, down in that junior high that are right now freshmen, going to be sophomores, and they're going to be something special. And I knew that group was going to be the next, you know, state championship runs. So it's tough leaving that group. But, we came here and we got here and we hadn't had a winning season in 14 years. They had just come off 6 wins. And but they have talent, you know, and it was football school. Sharon Springs was a football school. But we got into the youth program again and started 4 years ago with that. And we've grown from, I think, maybe we had 20 the first year, and this past year we had 46, I think. So, it just keeps growing and keeps growing, and people see it. And now we've got it into the high school where, kids are – out at Sharon, I had kids calling me on the weekends, say, "Coach, can I get in gym? Can we go scrimmage? You know, can I go in and shoot on the shoot away?" And for the first couple of years here, I never had a call. And I told them all the time, "All you got to do is text me and call me and I'll be over and we'll get to gym." Never had a call. And now I'm starting to get calls. I had calls last night, kids wanting to get in the gym and come in and scrimmage. And it's, you know, track season, baseball season. But you got to just get that fire. And then always when you go to a state tournament, that always gets everybody fired up and excited about what you're doing. And they hadn't been to a state tournament here in 44 years. So, and that was the only one before that they've been to. So we got a good group of kids. We got a good, great freshman class. We got a very good group of junior high kids that we've been working with at the youth camp. And that's all it takes. I mean, you've got to be willing to work. You got to be willing to sacrifice some things. And, you know, those are some things that I kind of regret. If I had regrets, those would be the type of things. But we can talk about that later. But those are the type of things you need to do to build a successful program. You need to be committed, and you need the kids. The biggest thing is the kids need to know that you're in it with them. And you want it, you got to show them that you want it more than what they want it. And that's just committing to the kids.
And, you know, I've seen programs that have ignored the youth program. And, you know, 8 years later, they can't field a varsity team. And one thing that, you know, I have to applaud you for is that you always did. And it wasn't even just basketball. You were always, you know, in Sharon, you were doing all sports. I remember helping you out with youth soccer. And, you know, even that thought leads me to another role you had as the weights coach. And I know that plays a huge role in the success of your teams as well. Can you kind of speak to the importance of the weight room? And before I let you answer this question, I'm going to give some context for the audience listening. In my senior year, every athletic team at Sharon Springs, except for girls basketball, went to a state championship that year. And I truly believe that was from the weight room. And to credit the girls basketball team, they made it to the sub-state championship game. So they're one game away from state championship. I mean, we're talking track and field, volleyball, cross country, boys basketball, track. I mean, even the forensics team made it to state. I mean, every team made it to state. Coach, can you kind of speak to coaches listening that might be wondering, what role does the weight room play in basketball?
Yeah, weight room to me is the number one thing. Well, absolutely, without a doubt. I love doing weights, and I love get kids in the weight room. But if you don't have a good weight program and you're not committed to get into the weight program, you'll never have a winning team. That's just fact. And I believe that. I started lifting weights in college. I never lifted weights in high school because we didn't have a weight program at all. Started lifting weights in college, and by my junior, senior year, I could see a difference, and I was hitting the ball. You know, I played basketball, I played baseball, hitting the ball a lot harder. But the first experience was when I went to Fairfield High School, and I took over a program in football that had lost 36 straight games. And I got there and they didn't have a weights program. So we got a weights program put in because I believed that we were just getting out, man, just, you know, it was crazy. And I even took my first year there, we took half of the football practice and we went to the weight room before we went out and actually went to practice. And then we had some fundraisers and got some weight equipment and started taking off. And in 2 years, our second year there, we ended up going to state powerlifting, and we were state powerlifting champs at Fairfield after 2 years, and continued to do that for the next 3 or 4 years. And the kids got into it, and we started feeling better. And, you know, we were 0-9 football that first year. And then we were 0-8 the next year. And then we beat Mound Ridge in the last game of the season to snap a 40, 50 some game losing streak. And the next year we went 7-2 and made the playoffs, and it was all in the weight room. And from that day on, or from those days on, I was like, I'm never going to do a program that we don't stress weights is the number one thing. And I'm right now I'm doing junior high PE. I have a class of junior high, and we lift 3 days a week in junior high PE. And, I've got 3 hours of high school weights, and I've got, probably I think total of maybe 60 kids. And we only have 80 some kids in our high school in weights. And here not this Saturday, but following Saturday, we're going to state powerlifting again. We're going to probably take about 40 kids. So yeah, the weight program, if you're not committed to that, again, you've got to be committed to it. And if you're not committed to that as a program, you're not going to win. I tell our kids all the time, and it's very true. The last 8 or 9 years, you go to state powerlifting here, and the teams that get first, second, and third, that fall, they were in the state championship in football. I mean, it's just a correlation. It's just what it is. If you're not in the weight room getting better, agility-wise, strength-wise, and you should know that. You know, and you came to Sharon, you were a weak little boy.
Yeah, I put on 30 pounds of muscle that 1 year.
You left Sharon, you were pretty solid, pretty yep. solid young man. So, yeah, weights is where it's at. I would pick weights over practice. I mean, I really would.
That's awesome. That's a huge quote. And, I mean, definitely something for coaches listening to take into consideration. I know Kevin coming from the East Coast and then moved out West, there's definitely a difference in the amount of support that schools provide towards weights programs, where a lot of that also starts with, too, like you mentioned, you know, fundraising, getting the equipment, creating the buy-in from admin. Whereas, you know, some schools in New York that I can speak to that I've taught in, went to school in, student taught in, their phys ed classes they may have like a weightlifting unit. But I mean, even that, they're like teaching them how to use the weight. So a lot of responsibility, even more so if you're an East Coast coach listening to this, a lot more responsibility falls on you to be able to make sure, you know, you're setting the precedent for your program, getting the kids into the gym before school, having summer weights. It's a big sacrifice as a teacher when you want to enjoy your summer. But if you want to have, you know, a successful program, I mean, how many summer mornings have you given up throughout your career?
Yeah, again, like I said, you got to be committed. And then again, that's an example that shows the kids how committed you are. You're getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning. Last summer, you know, here we got up at 6 and we ran 3 different sessions, high school boys, high school girls, junior high. And in 3.5 hours, we ran through over 100 kids. But it's the commitment of the coaches and, you know, and you know, all programs, if you don't have great parents that are committed, you're not going anywhere. You know that out of Sharon. We had fantastic parents, the Shims and the Allens, and they did whatever, you know, whatever. If we needed something, they provided it. And if you don't have good parent support, you're never going to make it either. So
100%. And I think that, you know, coaches listening to that, like Coach said, that that's easy to get parent support when you're, you know, bending over backwards and showing these parents that you're there for the right. kids. You want what's best for them.
Yep.
Coach, you had, I know you've made a huge impact on my life, and I only had you for a year. And I know there's countless other people that when I'm talking on the phone, running these camps and calling someone and they end up being a former player of yours, they end up speaking the world of you. And I know there's countless people that, you know, view you in the same light. I'm sure this is probably going to be related to this question. Can you share some memorable stories or lessons you've learned from your coaching experience that have had a lasting impact on you? You know, I think too, when I hear that, see that question and I know you, I think the impact you made on so many different people, but I'm curious, what is it that stands out to you when you look back at your career?
You know, the friendships, the kids that are still, you know, I coached, my first years at Brewster, you know, those kids, I'm in contact with those kids. Those kids talk to me all the time. Clint Herenick texts me, you know, a couple times a month. The Jay Reed just got a hold of me and wanted, you know, we wanted to meet at a K-State football game. Brett Armberger, Justin Jamison call me when they go out on their little card nights and we'll sit and talk, reminisce. And, you know, the people I had at Sharon, still very close to. I get calls from them, texts from them all the time. I get, you know, a lot of them come through because our right by our high school is the highway that goes to Emporia. When they're going to things, they'll stop by and see me at school, talk to me. It's just the friendships and relationships you make. You know, you're hard on kids while they're in school, but I think they respect that. Kids want to be coached. Kids want to be pushed. Kids want to have goals. And, you know, I'm not going to say I was an easy coach to get along with. I've mellowed out over the years. I don't think I'm nearly as tough here as I have been in the past. But kids want that. And, you know, I don't have anybody that I can say that, you know, I couldn't call that I have ever coached that wouldn't talk and just have a good, nice conversation. And those are the fun deals. You know, I just talked to Callahan Grun the other day. I talked to Chisholm Grun the other day. Grady Hammers calls me probably once a month just to ask questions. You know, he's a junior high coach now there, Sharon Springs, and just for suggestions, for advice. And those are always good. But, you know, the winning's always fun too, you know, as a group. You always want to, you know, after you win one or two state championships, it kind of gets more, you start gearing it more that you want, and you know how it felt. You want all your teams to feel that. So that's kind of the pressure that I put on myself every year. And I don't know if it's good pressure or bad pressure, but, you know, I want all my teams to feel what it's like to win a state championship, because I know what it's like, and I have a lot of players that know what it's like, and it's a special feeling. And nobody can ever take that away from you. You're a state champion. You're a 2001 state champion, and you're in the record books. Nobody's ever going to take it away. So yeah. Those are always fun, and I that keeps me driving. That keeps me motivated every year. Is the group that I want, the group that I'm coaching that year. Our final goal is to be the last one standing, just because I know the feeling, and I know the feeling that they will have. This year, we you know, you take baby steps everywhere you went. You know, built programs wherever I've went. This was a baby step. You know, we got to state for the first time in over 40 some years, and you know, we were playing the number one team in the state first round because we were the last seed, and they were good. They ended up winning the whole thing. They won the state championship. But, you know, the middle of the first quarter, we're up 16-12. And I look out on the court, and I've got three freshmen out there playing against the number one team in the state. Two of my freshmen starters, and then one came off the bench early. So, yeah, we're up 16-12 against that team, and I got three freshmen on the floor. So I'm excited for the future. I'm excited for these kids, and, you know, we're already in the gym working. Got three or four kids coming in it's not doing a spring sport. And but those are the type of things that, you know, get me down the road is just the relationships I built over the years. I will always cherish those, and then the motivation to win a state championship for everybody, so they know the feeling and they know how it feels, and they can always have that ring too.
Now, you've had a lot of, you know, players go on to become coaches. I coached a little bit, and I know when I was coaching, I was always trying to be the closest thing to you as possible. So I'm really interested to hear the answer to this question. You know, looking back throughout your career, if you could kind of think back to like those early years, what advice would you give to yourself as a young coach who's, you know, aiming for the success that you've experienced, both, you know, at the high school level, but even a coach who's maybe doing the youth basketball thing? What advice do you have?
Kind of like what we've talked about, is just, you're just going to have to get the kids to believe you. That's one thing that, you know, a lot of my players come back and say, "Coach, you know, I really wasn't that good, but you made me feel, you know, like I could do anything." And that, those are the type of things you got to get the kids to believe that they're better than what they are. Some advice that I would give. I did some family things that I wish I didn't do at the time. I kind of got those early years at Brewster and kind of got the, you know, the being young, got the winning thing going, and all coaches want to win, and then the pressure starts building. So you're kind of taken away from family time. And I that's my number one regret of all coaching and everything, was probably didn't, you know, I wish I had spent more time with Kyle and Tyler, and Linda, and just the overall family, you know, coming out to New York. You guys always knew they came out by themselves, and I was never there. Those are special. So that's probably, I had a podcast with a couple coaches here a couple weeks ago, and those are the things that you can never get back. So I would tell you've got to have a balance. And right now I try to balance a little bit more. As a young coach, I didn't. So as a young coach, I would tell them, you know, you got to stick with fundamentals of the players. Fundamentals win games. Everybody goes into, we got to get in, we got to do all these plays, and we got to do out of bounds plays, and all, we got to have all these offenses. Well, if you don't know how to dribble and pass and back cut and V cut and block out correctly, all that stuff doesn't matter. So in our youth camps, all we do is fundamentals. We don't scrimmage, we don't do anything like that. And that's kind of how, when we started PGU, the way we kind of took that as our basis. But yeah, you've got to, as a young coach, you've got to balance, especially if you've got young kids, you've got to balance your coaching and your family life. You know, you see Jay Wright, some coaches now giving up. I mean, they're great coaches and they were in great programs, but they give them up because it's always, I want to spend more time with my family. So you don't want to lose those early years. And you got time. You know, I think back, I could have made time. I mean, and we still could have been good. You know, it would have took a little more hard work, but we would have still been good. We'd still done exactly what we did. But I would have been able to spend a little more time with Kyle and Tyler and Linda and the family. So that's probably my biggest, whenever I talk to people and talk to young kids and coaches that want to get in, you know, Grady Hammer asked the same question. And he just had a young kid. He wanted, you know, talk about being a high school coach. But he didn't want to give up the time to, because he has a new young kid. So we talked about things like that. So that's the advice I would give. When you're coaching, stick to the fundamentals, stick to getting your young kids good, so when they get to high school, they're ready to go. And then just make sure that you divide your time up into family and your coaching.
That's great advice. And I know that tugs at the heart of every coach listening. And, you know, for parents, any parents that are listening, keep this in mind before you send a harsh text to coach. You know, they're spending more time with your kids than sometimes they are with their own. By the time they're getting home after an away game, kids are already asleep. It's definitely something, you know, a truth that you just said, I know resonated with a lot of listeners, coach. And I appreciate you sharing that. You mentioned the early years of the point guard you know, looking back 7 years later, what stands out about that first point guard you camp in Sharon Springs?
Well, you know, it was kind of a, you know, Kyle and I getting together, and like I said, it was that turning point where I wanted to spend more time with kids. And it was just an opportunity where Kyle and I could be together for a week solid out in Kansas and spend some time together and do something that we really enjoy doing. And that's coaching basketball, and that's getting kids to play the game. So, you know, we kind of came up with the idea and put it together at Sharon Springs, and we had great support. You know, we had people getting us water every day because those gyms were hot. But the first year, I think we had, I don't know what, 60, 70 kids. And then it just kind of caught wildfire. Other schools kind of got involved, and Quinter brought a big group. The 2 years we had there, they brought a limousine down and brought all their kids down. And, you know, Goodland caught on. And, you know, unfortunately, we got too big. So I had to find – I got Max Jones – to Max, Aaron Goodland, where we're at now. And it just, you know, it continues to be the number one camp. And it was fun. I mean, you know, we had a great time, and we got a lot of good feedback from a lot of the parents, and, you know, saying, hey, this camp's fantastic. You don't charge enough for this camp, and, you know, things like that. And then, you know, we got being in it as long as I have out in Kansas, I've become friends with a lot of people. And, you know, the Dodge City, when I'm college roommate and friends with the superintendent. So that's how that got hooked up. And then the Salina one actually was an ex-player, Eric Brown. Oh, ex-player for me with Jay, and he was on the championship teams those first years, and he ended up being pretty big boy in Salina. That Mr. Salina is what they called him, and he contacted me and said, hey, would you be interested? And I went up and talked to him and the Salina Fieldhouse, and we got that hooked up. And you know, and then coming to Canton, switching to Canton. So yeah, it's been a kind of a crazy ride. And, you know, a lot of good friends in these camps. I mean, look what the Goodland girls did. Every one of those girls attended camp out at Goodland since they were the first year we had it. They ended up going 3A back-to-back state champs. We've had players of the year go through PGU. The big boy from Hoxie. He went to our first two camps at Sharon Springs, and look what he's doing now. He's playing.
Yeah, we just watched him play the home opener versus Notre Dame.
I watched watched that game. So it's been fun, and it continues to be fun. You know, the one thing I'm very appreciative of is you, because, you know, this last question you have on here. What goals are upcoming seasons for Canton Galvin? What are strategies to implement? Last year when I said I wanted to step away because I wanted to start giving more time because I knew I had some talent coming up at Canton, wanted to step away from doing the camps and give my except for the Canton camp and give all my energy and focus to my guys here, which I was able to do. And you can see what happened. We made a state tournament for the first time in over 40 years because of that. And that was because, you know, Kyle and I both thought you were ready to go take over the reins. And, you know, you've proven that to be true. And we're, you know, those are the type of things now that I can sit back. I'd still love to be doing what I do with PGU, but right now I just can't because I've got other responsibilities. And with you there taking the reins, and you know, I feel comfortable. And obviously, everybody that's on the staff has taken this camp to a new level, as far as you know, the video, everything you guys do. It seems to get better every year. So I'm comfortable with that. But you know, after I get done, it's something I, you know, I'm looking to get back into and help with the camp as much as I can. But you know, the strategy, you know, that last question you had, the strategies is I have responsibilities here, and I've got unbelievable kids coming up that I think eventually here down the road in the next couple of years, we could probably win a state championship. And I've got to put all, like I told you earlier in the podcast, you've got to show your kids that you're in it just as much as they are. And if I'm gone four or five times, you know, that one summer I was gone that four or five times and I wasn't putting it in here, I felt guilty. And, you know, I don't feel like the kids thought that I was 100% in. And I think they feel like I'm 100% in now because, you know, of what you and Kyle and your group has been able to do. And, you know, I'm glad to still host the one here, you know, gets all of our kids involved and, you know, a lot of area kids. And we've got some great coaches coming in. I've got some great coaches coming in already this year. So, you know, I'm excited for the camp here, but I'm also excited for the way the when Kyle and I started this, we didn't think, you know, it was going to go past Sharon Springs. And, you know, look where it's at now. And hard work. I'm proud of, you know, what we've done and what you guys are now continue to do and how you guys are building it. And, you know, future looks great. And when and if I ever retire, you know, I'll jump back on board and pitch in and see what I can do to make it bigger and better.
I'll tell you what, it doesn't seem like that retirement day is going to come anytime soon. You just keep going, man. You've been doing how many years you've been coaching?
Oh, close to 30.
That's awesome.
You know, and you're right. Retirement, you know, Linda's been wanting, she's been on me every day to retire because she's retiring this year, but I'm just not ready. You know, I started this program and we're heading in the right direction, and I've got some good, really good young kids coming up. So retirement doesn't look anytime soon. Let's just put it that way. So
that's exciting. That's good news. Okay. People rejoicing in Canton Galva right now as we
speak.
Well,
I hope so. I hope so.
Well, Coach,
you always have those naysayers.
Yeah. Cannot thank you enough for coming on the podcast, Coach. This is one of my favorites. It was a privilege for me to get to interview a former coach of mine. And I know there's a lot of former players that are going to be listening to this podcast as well. You've made a huge impact throughout your career at all different schools, Fairfield, Brewster, Sharon Springs, Canton, Galva, and, you know, through Point Guard U, heck of a career. And I'm thankful that I've had a chance to be around you, learn from you, and try my best to mimic you. Even in this new role that you talked about that I stepped into, just trying my best to live up to the Larry O'Connor standard. And it was all I was ever trying to do in my short time that I was coaching. So
I appreciate that, Reed, but you make sure that you live up to the Reed Warner standard. Okay. You're doing a great job.
Appreciate it, Coach.
Looking it in the right direction. So proud of you.
Appreciate it. You are always welcome on the pod. We'll have to do this again. We are pushing 45 minutes, which is the perfect podcast time. It's probably our longest one yet, but it was a perfect podcast. Be on the lookout for part two, Coach O'Connor. Super thankful for having you on.
Let me know when this airs or where I can get a hold of it. Love to hear it.
Sounds good. Will do. Thanks, Coach.